This is Audible.
Prologue. Someone had pierced the shard's cloaking device. There was a very real danger that Hazel Dark's career as a clone legger was over before it had even begun.
Hannah, talk to me. How deep are we in it?
This is an Imperial Star Cruiser we're discussing, Hazel. They don't come much more powerful than this. They'd blast us into tiny glowing fragments before we even left orbit.
That ship is full of death and the memory of pain. They're clone leggers.
That settles it, then. We can't waste time over a handful of body snatchers. Blow the ship to pieces.
Hannah, I'm stuck in escape pod 7. I need you to run through the launch sequence for me.
Forget the AI. She's falling apart like everything else on this ship. I've activated the pod launch from the bridge. You'll be on your way in a moment. If you get out of this alive, raise a drink to me and the shard.
Damn. You've killed me, Owen.
Why, Kathy? Why did you do it?
You've been outlawed. Anyone who brings your head to the Imperial Court on Golgotha will be rewarded with the lordship of Viramond and half of your monies. Somebody really wants you dead, Owen.
Ozymandias.
Shut up and listen. You've been outlawed, and there's a hell of a price on your head.
I know.
So does your head of security. He's on his way to you right now with as many guards as he could muster, with the explicit intention of separating your head from your shoulders. You've got to get out of there now.
The men who used to be his guards advanced purposefully, weapons at the ready. Owen wrapped himself in what was left of his pride and dignity, and fought to keep his head up. And then a ship came crashing down out of nowhere, and everything changed.
Move, you idiot! Shift your ass and get in here! I'm Hazel Dark. How I got here is rather complicated. I rescued you because I didn't like the odds you were facing.
I'm new to the outlaw business. Where can we go where we'll be safe from the kind of people who'll be coming after me?
There's only one place we can go. Mistworld, the rebel planet.
Take us out of here, Oz. We're going to Mistworld.
And the good God grant us luck, because we're going to need it.
Defiance Audio presents Simon R. Green's Deathstalker. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, and Terrence Acil Ford. Episode 2, Friends, Enemies, and Allies. Rising to the Experience. The city had another name once, but no one remembers it now. For the past 300 years, it has been known throughout the Empire as the Parade of the Endless, home of the arena and the games. It's not a large city by Golgotha standards, but it grows a little every year as new citizens are drawn to it like flies to rotting meat. There are gambling houses and pleasure domes, reality shunts and psi jaunts, wonders and marvels and spectacles beyond counting, but no one comes to the Parade of the Endless for those. They are the appetizers, the side dishes, something to clear the palate and sharpen the senses before moving on to something stronger. In the center of the city, deep in its dark and bloody heart, lies the arena. A wide open space of carefully raked sands surrounded by tiers of banked seating. It is kept safe and separate from the rest of the city by a series of force screens, only ever lowered in sequence. It's hard to get into the arena. It's even harder to get out. Those that live there never leave. They have their own places in the cells and chambers and twisting passageways deep beneath the arena. The gladiators live in relative luxury, honing their fighting skills and dreaming of fame and glory. Trainers and service staff live in the planar chambers, their lives dedicated to the smooth running of the games. Prisoners await their fate in the darkness of their cells on the lowest level, knowing they will never see light again till they are pushed stumbling out onto the bloody sands of the arena. There are always prisoners. Men, clones, espers, and aliens. Fodder for the never-ending hunger of the crowds. People come from all over the Empire to see blood and suffering in the arena, to see life and death played out by the ancient rules. Billions more watch it all on their holoscreens every night. But for the true fans, the connoisseurs, seeing is not enough. They need to be there, in person, to see with their own eyes, drink in the atmosphere, and smell the bloodlust on the air as the crowd cheers their favorites, boos the incompetent, and bays for another death. The crowd always has its favorites, but as a rule, they don't last long. That's why it's called the Parade of the Endless. Heroes come and go, but the games go on forever. The city is also unique in being the only city on Golgotha not owned or dominated by a single clan. The Empress sees to that, through subtle pressure and not so subtle purges, to ensure that the games remain fair and unbiased. Everyone has an equal chance to die on the bloody sands. Otherwise, there'd be no fun to it. The Parade of the Endless has thus become a safe, neutral ground, a meeting place for families who could not otherwise, with honor, communicate. Instead, the clans settle their differences through their champions in the arena. Face is upheld, and honor is satisfied. And if it tends to be rather hard on the champions, well, no one really gives a damn. Or at least, no one who matters. In return for this outlet, the families provide generous contributions to the upkeep of the arena and its staff. Even more of their money flows into the arena's coffers through the family's never-ending appetite for gambling. Fortunes are won and lost daily as the clans plunge heavily in support of their champions and their honor. The champions are always paid men. Members of the families would never dream of fighting in person. To risk one's life in a formal duel was one thing. To lower oneself to perform for the pleasure of the crowd was quite another. Besides, it wouldn't do for the lower orders to see the aristocracy dying. It might give them ideas. Around the arena, in ever-expanding circles, live the citizens of the Parade of the Endless, the traders, the service industries, and those who have fought or plan to fight on the bloody sands. The games are open to all, the crowd's appetite is boundless, and there is always a need for fresh meat. And so they come from all over the Empire, seeking fame and riches, action and excitement. Or, just a place to die in the sun. No one is ever turned away. Death is very democratic. The streets around the arena were packed with people, as always, coming or going or trying to sell something to those who were. Valentine Wolfe moved casually through the crush. Tall and darkly delicate, he was not an immediately impressive figure, but still, no one jostled him or got in his way. Everyone recognized the mascaraed eyes and scarlet smile, as they knew all the clan faces that mattered, and none of them had any wish to do anything that might be taken as an insult to Clan Wolfe. So Valentine walked on, his thoughts hidden behind the painted mask of his face, his eyes dark and far away. He never bothered with bodyguards. Some said through pride, some said through arrogance, but if truth be told, Valentine simply preferred the company of his own thoughts whenever possible, and found guards a distraction. He finally came to a halt outside a modest little patisserie, just a little off the beaten trail, and gazed thoughtfully at the wondrous confectionery creations in the window. He wasn't averse to the occasional indulgence of his sweet tooth, but that wasn't what had brought him there. The shop's owner, the one and only Georgios, supplied Valentine with tastes more tempting and far sweeter than anything to be found in his window. Georgios was one outlet of a complex drugs pipeline that Valentine had spent years putting together. Someone of his status could have practically anything he wanted just by asking, but Valentine preferred to keep his needs and appetites strictly private. Knowledge was power. And besides, some of the things he wanted were banned even to those of his rank, which was at least partly why he wanted them. A single black rose stood in a slender glass vase in the left-hand corner of the window, and Valentine studied it thoughtfully. The rose was Georgios's way of saying that he had Valentine's order ready to hand. That it was in the left rather than the right-hand side of the window was his way of saying that something was wrong. Valentine smiled slightly and considered his options. He could just walk away and avoid whatever trouble it was. Most likely it was some kind of trap. Like all those who played at the great game of intrigue, Valentine had his fair share of enemies, and then some. But if he did just walk away, he'd never know whose trap it was, and how they'd found out about Georgios. He hadn't thought anyone knew about him and Georgios. Besides, it would mean leaving the dear fellow in the hands of his enemy, and that would never do. He couldn't let people get away with threatening his friends and business partners, or he'd end up without any of either. And a good business partner was hard to replace. He pushed open the door and walked in quite casually, as though he didn't have a care in the world. It was dark inside the shop. Someone had polarized the windows to keep out the sun. Valentine let the door drift shut behind him and stood very still. He concentrated in a certain series of ways, and drug caches deep in his system opened obediently to the mental triggers and dumped their contents into his bloodstream. Fresh, oxygenated blood rushed to his muscles, which swelled subtly, readying themselves for action. His senses became supernaturally acute, and the shadows before him began to give up their secrets. There were 12 of them, standing very still at the rear of the shop. 2 of them were holding Giorgio securely with a hand over his mouth. Valentine's smile widened slightly. They were all dead. They just didn't know it yet.
Turn up the light, someone. There's a good fellow. We can't negotiate in the dark.
What makes you think we want to negotiate?
Said a voice that tried to sound cultured, but couldn't quite bring it off.
If you were assassins, you'd have killed me the moment I walked in. Therefore, I assume you have something to say to me. Do get on with it. I'm running late for an appointment.
The light flared up suddenly as one of the shadowy figures cleared the window glass, the bright sunlight revealing a dozen gang members grinning arrogantly at him from the rear of the shop. They were all naked, the better to show off the bulging muscles and other enhancements they'd bought from cheap knockoff body shops in the darker back alleyways. They'd all had their skin dyed the same overpowering shade of electric blue to declare which gang they belonged to, and a blazing silver skull had been tattooed on every chest. There were a dozen less painful ways the skulls could have been imprinted on their flesh, but the pain was the point. It was an initiation, a declaration of courage and dedication. Tattoos were for life. So was gang membership. Valentine recognized them immediately, as he was supposed to. The Demons, one of the larger bands of street toughs who ran wild in the grubbier areas of the city. Valentine took his time studying the Demons. It wouldn't do to give the impression that he was at all nervous or insecure. They were all armed, most with swords, some with knives or machetes or lengths of spiked chain. Now that his eyes had completely adjusted to the change in light, Valentine could tell from the Demons' flushed faces and overbright eyes that they'd been primed with something extra. Cheap knockoff battle drugs, probably. He chuckled appreciatively. At least his enemy was taking him seriously. Real battle drugs were hard to come by outside the military, but Valentine had a supplier, as he had for most things. However, the number of people who knew that were very small. The identity of his enemy was becoming clearer by the minute. He concentrated in a certain way and breathed deeply as a catalyst set off the battle drug lying quiescent in his system.
Time to get this show on the road, gentlemen. Why don't you release poor Georgios and let him leave so that we can be about our business?
Poor Georgios isn't going anywhere. Our orders are no witnesses,
said the tough with the scarlet headband that marked him as gang leader.
And who gave you your orders?
The leader smiled mockingly.
You don't need to know that. What matters is the message I have for you. Well, not so much a message, more a warning. Word is, you've made a nuisance of yourself once too often, and our employer's hired us to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Oh, dear. Another death threat. How terribly dull.
We're not going to kill you. We're not dumb enough to take a job like that. Kill an aristo and every guard in the city will be after us. No. We're just going to break both your legs, both your arms, do a bit of a dance on your ribs, and then walk away and leave you. Our employers want you hurt and humiliated, and we're only too happy to oblige. We're being paid a hell of a lot to crush you, Wolfie, but we'd have done it for nothing. We hate you, aristo, you and all your kind.
We don't hate you. We don't notice you any more than we notice any of the other rubbish that floats past in the gutters.
The demon stopped laughing, and the tension in the air was suddenly sharp and imminent. Light glinted on steel as they hefted swords and machetes. The gang leader drew a long, slender knife and stood beside Georgios.
Hold him still! I don't think our little aristo here is taking us seriously. Maybe this will change his mind.
He cut Georgios' throat with a single economic sweep of his knife. Blood spurted out across the spotlessly clean floor. Georgios bucked and heaved in his captor's hands, but couldn't break free. He couldn't even get his hands to the gaping second mouth in his throat. The strength went quickly out of him, along with his blood, and he slumped forward. His captors let him go, and he fell forward onto the floor to lie still in his own blood. He died so suddenly it was hard to tell the exact moment when the life went out of him. Only Valentine was watching. The demons were watching him. Valentine slowly raised his dark eyes and looked at the demons. And suddenly, there was something new in the air. His crimson slash of a smile had no humor in it, and his mascaraed eyes were very cold. He looked different, and it took the demons a moment to realize how. He didn't look helpless anymore.
Now that was a pity. Nobody made a pastry like dear Georgios. I'm going to have to punish you for that. Georgios wasn't much, but he was mine. No one takes anything from me and lives to boast of it. I'm afraid I'm going to have to kill you all. I'll try not to enjoy it too much.
For a long moment, no one said anything. The demon stood very still, and tension crackled in the air. And then the gang leader laughed softly, and everyone's attention switched to him.
Nice try, aristo. You nearly brought it off. But you can't intimidate us anymore. There are 12 of us and only the one of you. And odds like that don't care how important you are. Take him, boys. We're going to have some fun.
The gang members moved forward as one, spreading out in a circle around Valentine, who made no move either to attack or escape. He kept his dark eyes fixed on the gang leader, while his hyped-up senses kept track of the others. He could hear every step, every rustle of clothing, and their scents came thickly to him on the close air. He didn't need to see them to know where they were. His smile never wavered. From the orchestrated nature of their movements, it was obvious to Valentine that the demon's enhancements included some kind of cheap simpatico drug. They moved in a synchronized, coordinated way, as though each member knew exactly where every other member was, and they all lifted their weapons at the same time, in the same way. Follow the leader. Of course, if you took out the leader. Valentine stepped forward impossibly quickly, his movements driven by the battle drugs raging within him, and pivoted sharply on one foot so that the other shot up and slammed into the side of the gang leader's head. The force of the blow whipped the demon's head around, breaking his neck, and he crumpled to the floor, his eyes rolling up in their sockets. By the time he hit the floor, Valentine had already turned on the next demon. The various battle drugs were howling in him now, filling his mind and his body with possibilities. His hands and feet moved too fast to be seen, and the last thing the demon saw before they fell was his terrible crimson smile. In the end, 11 dead gang members lay scattered across the patisserie floor, like so many broken flowers, lying still in awkward poses, in pools of their own blood. Only one demon remained alive, sitting, shaking, with his back to a wall, nursing a broken arm, and trying to keep as far from Valentine as he could. His breathing was harsh, and his eyes were wide, and shock and pain had driven most of the drugs from his system. For all his clawed hands and pointed teeth and bulked up muscle, he'd never stood a chance against Valentine, and both of them knew it. He licked his dry lips, stared in fascinated horror at Valentine, and tried desperately to think of anything he knew that he might be able to trade for his life, and trying even more desperately to keep from his face the thought of the one thing that might still save him. Valentine Wolfe brushed himself off and made a quiet moue of distaste at the blood that soaked his garments. Little of it was his, and his wounds had already healed. He dumped a universal cutoff and flush into his bloodstream, and the various battle drugs had dissipated quickly, leaving his mind sharp and clear, and his body whole and relaxed. Nothing like a good workout to focus the mind. He looked about him at the dead demons and felt no pity for them. They should have chosen a different target for their class anger. Of course, they had no idea what kind of fighter they were taking on. No one knew about his martial skills, or at least, nobody living. He'd gone to great pains to keep his ability secret, including killing his trainers. It suited Valentine that his enemies should always underestimate him. He loomed over the sole surviving demon and smiled down at him. The demon winced away from the smile and pressed back against the wall behind him, but there was nowhere left to go.
11 men dead in under 3 minutes. There are only 3 men outside the arena who could match that, and I'm 2 of them. I know, I'm not at all what you expected, but then that's life, isn't it? I'm really rather annoyed with you. Poor Georgios is dead, my mourning has been ruined, and my clothes are a mess. The only reason you're not dead and frying in whatever afterlife you believe in is because you have information I want. Someone set you on my trail, and you're going to tell me who. Because if you don't, I'm going to take the morning's frustration out on you, and you'd be surprised how inventive I can be when I'm annoyed. Talk now.
The demon spat a thick wad of blood onto the floor between his outstretched legs and tested a loose tooth with the tip of his tongue. He wouldn't meet Valentine's eyes. They upset him too much.
I don't know their names. They didn't offer them, and for the kind of credits they were putting up, we didn't ask. Never saw their faces either. Had the maiden behind hollow masks. Man and a woman. Young. Rich. Arrogant. Aristos like you, by their accents. But they did leave something behind. Something that might interest you. It's in my pouch. Over there.
He nodded gingerly in the direction of a hip pouch lying abandoned on one side of the fight. It was still sealed. Valentine walked over and picked it up with one thumb and forefinger. He brought it back and dropped it in the demon's lap. He winced at the impact, and Valentine smiled down at him.
Open it. And be very careful. After all, there might be a booby trap of some kind, mightn't there?
The demon smiled mirthlessly and fumbled at the pouch's straps with shaking fingers. His face was pale and blotchy, and the come down from the drugs was obviously getting to him. Valentine watched him dispassionately. Amateurs had no business meddling with drugs. He looked back at the front door. One of the demons had activated the closed sign embedded in the glass of the door. That, together with the swiftness of the actual fight, had kept anyone from breezing into the shop in search of Georgios. But it wouldn't do to hang about too long. Some people, such as those of Valentine's rank, would only see the closed sign as a challenge. They might even kick the door in if they were sufficiently annoyed. Valentine would have. And the last thing he needed was to be found surrounded by dead bodies and soaked in their blood. It would be difficult to explain, and harder still to cover up. The authorities would take a great deal of expensive soothing and his father would be furious. Valentine winced. No, that wouldn't do at all. It occurred to him that the demon was taking an uncommonly long time to get the pouch open. He stepped forward impatiently, and then stopped dead in his tracks as the demon opened the pouch, reached in, and pulled out a disruptor. Valentine froze where he was, his mind racing. The energy weapon changed everything. There was no way a small-time street tough could have got his hands on a disruptor through normal channels. It was death for such as him to even possess such a weapon. But the gun in the demon's hand was real enough, which suggested the demon's mysterious patrons really had been aristocrats after all. Valentine ran quickly through the drugs still available in his system. He'd used up most of the useful ones, and he was pretty sure the demon would shoot him if he made any move for his silver pillbox. He could still jump the tough and trust his reflexes were in better shape than the demon's. He could also get himself killed. He decided he was going to stand very still and wait for an inspiration to strike him. The demon covered him with the energy gun, though it was all he could do to keep it steady. There was a wildness in his eyes that Valentine didn't like at all. And yet it occurred to him that the demon had had plenty of time to shoot him, if that was what he intended. And if he had had an energy gun all along, why hadn't he used it during the fight? And then, as Valentine watched, the demon slowly turned the energy gun on himself, his face full of surprise and horror, pressed the barrel against his forehead, and depressed the stud. His head exploded in a splatter of blood and brains that rained down all over the shop. Valentine cursed mildly. The demon had obviously been programmed by his patrons not to reveal any secrets. And that was interesting. It suggested that not only did the patrons have access to a mind tech, but that the demons knew things that their patrons couldn't afford to have revealed. Valentine smiled slowly as he wiped the fresh blood from his face with a scented handkerchief. He'd already worked out who the patrons were, who they had to be. He made his way to the living quarters at the back of the shop in search of a cloak he could use to cover his blood-stained clothes. He'd have to replace them before he rejoined his family. Wouldn't do to have them asking questions, and besides, he hated to be seen not looking his best. He had an image to maintain. He glanced back at the dead bodies littering the floor. Poor Georgios.
Ah, dear brother, dear sister. What am I going to do with you?
Daniel and Stephanie Wolfe, brother and sister to Valentine, waited impatiently for news in the family's private box at the edge of the arena. It was a fair-sized box, as boxes went, complete with every luxury that money and position could command. The sands lay a mere 10 feet below, so that the occupants of the box could enjoy the various life-and-death struggles at close range, and it came equipped with its own private forescreen, just in case things looked like they were getting a little too close.